take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
Yeah! The Rough Melville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Melville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Friday, March 26, 2021, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. We are getting close to it here in the Mountain Time Zone, where spring has definitely sprung. Looking out and seeing sun out of both windows. A little partly cloudy and cool, but so nice to finally be turning the corner on what was a cold winter and worse, this pandemic. I just got the first dose of the Moderna vaccine just the other day, so my arm's a little sore, but the vaccinations are happening, and hopefully we'll be able to go back to having real lives. We got a real busy show on today's program. We're going to go behind the headlines on voter suppression in the state of Georgia, a look at New York and its impending marijuana legalization that could include home grow and lounges, and how the Biden administration is messing up right out of the gate by firing staffers for their pot use. And then in the hour two Toker Talk Radio, we're going to take a deep look at the concept of qualified immunity, basically how cops get to violate your constitutional rights at least once for free. But before we get to all that, let's catch you up on what's happened this week in the Cannabis Headline News.
This is your Cannabis Headline News, brought to you every weekday by Radical Russ Radio at RadicalRuss.com, your 24-hour source for marijuana music and cannabis conversations. Subscribe today for just $4.20 at patreon.com/radicalruss. With your cannabis headline news for the week ending Friday, March 26, 2021, I'm Russ Belville. President Joe Biden could theoretically end the policy of firing White House staff over prior marijuana use himself, Press Secretary Jen Psaki said on Wednesday, but that's not happening as long as cannabis is federally illegal. During a press briefing, Psaki was asked why the president would allow multiple people to be terminated for admitting to using marijuana in the past as part of their background check process, especially given that Vice President Kamala Harris joked about her own cannabis consumption during her 2020 presidential run.
So that isn't about anyone's personal point of view. It's about working through the process, the history, and modernizing it and taking steps to address the fact that marijuana is legal in a number of states across the country. It is still illegal federally.
A coalition of 30 members of Congress sent a letter to President Joe Biden on Thursday that criticizes the administration for terminating or otherwise punishing multiple White House staffers who admitted to past marijuana use. Representative Earl Blumenauer, co-chair of the Congressional Cannabis Caucus, led the letter, which states that the lawmakers were, quote, dismayed to learn that several White House staffers were reportedly suspended, put on probation, or asked to resign after honestly disclosing past cannabis use. The American people are demanding a change to punitive and harsh cannabis laws that have always been unequally applied, the letter states, adding that the employment policies, quote, have been applied in inconsistent and unfair ways, given that past presidents, as well as Harris and Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg, have admitted to using marijuana in their youth, quote, without consequences, end quote. A Republican congressman sent a letter calling on President Joe Biden to direct his administration to stop firing White House staff for admitting prior marijuana use and instead rehire people who were asked to resign solely for being honest about their history with cannabis. Representative David Joyce, a co-chair of the Congressional Cannabis Caucus, pointed out in his new letter that numerous states have moved to legalize marijuana in some form, overturning, quote, decades-long policies that are both arcane and discriminatory. He added that, quote, when used correctly and responsibly, cannabis has many proven health benefits, end quote. The opioid crisis and COVID-19 pandemic further underscore why, quote, we should be encouraging these therapies, not finding ways to further stigmatize and disenfranchise them, end quote, he wrote on Monday. A separate letter from multiple lawmakers is expected to be delivered to the White House this week. As a growing number of Democratic and Republican lawmakers criticize the Biden administration's decision to fire or otherwise punish dozens of staffers who admitted to prior marijuana use, the White House is issuing further clarification in an attempt to tamp down the swelling controversy. Press Secretary Jen Psaki has previously attempted to minimize the fallout with not much success, and so her office released a new statement on Thursday stipulating that nobody was fired for, quote, marijuana usage from years ago, nor has anyone been terminated, quote, due to casual or infrequent use during the past 12 months, end quote. Quote, the policy has allowed around a dozen White House staff to continue serving in the administration who would have not been permitted under prior administration's policies, end quote, reads the statement, which was provided to Playboy reporter Brian Karam. A bill to protect banks that work with state legal marijuana businesses that was introduced in the House this week will advance before lawmakers tackle more comprehensive cannabis reform, a key congressman said on Friday. During a press call to discuss the Secure and Fair Enforcement Banking Act, or SAFE Banking Act, Representatives Ed Perlmutter, Earl Blumenauer, and other co-sponsors answered questions about the state of play of the legislation, which cleared the chamber as a standalone bill in 2019 and twice as part of COVID-19 relief packages last year. Blumenauer, co-chair of the Congressional Cannabis Caucus and original co-sponsor of the bill, said that the plan is to pass the banking reform first because it, quote, is a public safety crisis now, and it's, quote, distinct, as we've heard from some of my colleagues, distinct from how they feel about comprehensive reform, end quote. A bill to protect banks that service state legal marijuana businesses from being penalized by federal regulators has been reintroduced in the Senate, with nearly a third of the chamber as co-sponsors. It's a development that takes on a new light now that Democrats are back in control of the chamber. This comes days after the Secure and Fair Enforcement Banking Act, or SAFE Banking Act, was refiled in the House, where it passed with bipartisan support as a standalone bill in 2019 and also as part of two COVID-19 relief bills. The Senate version is being sponsored by Senators Jeff Merkley, Democrat of Oregon, and Steve Daines, Republican of Montana, and it currently has 27 other co-sponsors. In the House, the legislation has more than 100 members who've signed on as co-sponsors. Lawmakers in states across the country are taking up marijuana reform measures this year after a November election in which voters passed every state-level drug reform initiative put before them. But in three states, Maryland, Hawaii, and Wyoming, bills to end cannabis prohibition this year have died in recent days as key legislative deadlines have passed. Lawmakers in other states, meanwhile, including New York, Kansas, North Dakota, Rhode Island, New Mexico, Delaware, and others, are still pursuing some form of cannabis reform this year. And in Virginia, the legislature last month sent a legalization bill to the governor's desk. Broader drug reform efforts also got underway this year in California, Connecticut, Florida, Kansas, Missouri, New York, Rhode Island, Washington State, and Virginia, where lawmakers have introduced a variety of bills during the 2021 session, some dealing with psychedelics, but others that call for comprehensive decriminalization. The North Dakota Senate on Thursday rejected a bill to legalize marijuana, killing the reform proposal that passed out of the House last month. As the legislation has progressed this year, many lawmakers emphasized that they don't actually support adult use legalization, but they wanted to get ahead of activists who were working to place a more far-reaching constitutional initiative to enact the policy change on the 2022 ballot. But with lawmakers' failure to move the issue to the governor's desk, it seems that voters may have to decide on legalizing cannabis after all. Senators defeated the legalization measure in a 10-37 vote. This comes days after the Senate Human Services Committee advanced Representative Jason Doctor's legislation in a 5-1 vote without a recommendation. On Sunday, Governor Jared Polis visited a marijuana dispensary in Denver to sign a measure that would establish a program within the State Office of Economic Development and International Trade that's intended to support cannabis businesses owned by people who qualify as social equity licensees, primarily people impacted by the drug war. It will provide those individuals with loans for seed capital and ongoing business expenses, as well as grants to support innovation and job creation, according to a bill summary. It also makes technical assistance available to marijuana business owners. Meanwhile, the Colorado House approved a bill last week that would increase the amount of marijuana an adult 21 or older can possess from 1 to 2 ounces. It also requires courts to approve requests to have prior records for cannabis possession sealed without consulting a district attorney, as long as the proper documentation is provided. New Mexico's Senate failed to hear a marijuana legalization bill as time ticked down to the close of the legislative session on Saturday. With just hours left before lawmakers adjourned, however, Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham said she'll call them back soon for a special session to consider the issue of ending cannabis prohibition.
We're going to have a special session in a week or so, and we're going to get cannabis because I am not going to wait another year. We're going to win it, and it's going to have the social justice aspects that we know have to be in a package.
The legalization measure, HB 12, which passed the House of Representatives last month, was repeatedly delayed during the week amid a frantic push by lawmakers to make amendments to the nearly 200-page bill. While the full Senate was scheduled to hear the legislation Friday, it became clear over the course of the day that wouldn't happen. The legislature officially came to a close at noon Saturday. Ahead of an end-of-the-month deadline to propose changes to a marijuana legalization bill that's on his desk, Virginia Governor Ralph Northam is signaling he'd like the state to legalize personal possession of cannabis as soon as July 1st, 2.5 years before lawmakers planned. Under the legislature's proposal, passed by the Senate and the House of Delegates last month, possession of marijuana wouldn't become legal until January 1st, 2024, timed to coincide with the launch of the commercial market. But while Northam has yet to formally declare whether he'll seek to move up the timeline, he said in comments this week that he doesn't like the idea of continuing to punish people for something that will soon be legal. Quote, "I personally don't think we should be arresting or penalizing somebody for something we're getting ready to legalize," end quote, he told VPM in an interview Wednesday. The governor of Rhode Island, Daniel McKee, said on Friday that he supports allowing people to have their prior marijuana records expunged as part of an effort to legalize cannabis, even though that policy was not included in a reform proposal he recently introduced.
That's one of the equity pieces in this, in the marijuana, right? That disproportionately you have people of color that have been charged.
Pressed further on whether expungement for marijuana crimes would be automatic or require some sort of effort, the governor dodged the question.
Either way is fine with me. I think that they just need a path towards that. If, in fact, it's no longer a crime today and it was then, that shouldn't be part of that record.
The governor of South Dakota is looking to strike a deal with the legislature over plans to implement a medical marijuana program in the state, but advocates feel a reform proposal she's floating doesn't go far enough. South Dakota voters approved separate ballot initiatives to legalize cannabis for medical and recreational use in November, despite Governor Kristi Noem's opposition to the policy change. The adult use measure was struck down by a judge last month following challenges over its constitutionality, with a state Supreme Court appeal pending, but the medical marijuana initiative is set to go into effect on July 1. Now she's seeking a compromise, and one proposal out of her administration that's being considered would decriminalize possession of up to 1 ounce of cannabis, limit the number of plants that patients could cultivate to 3, and prohibit people under 21 from qualifying for medical marijuana. After months of negotiation, New York lawmakers and the governor have reached a tentative deal on a bill to legalize marijuana in the state. Here's what the legalization legislation is expected to contain, according to press reports. Adults 21 and older would be able to possess and purchase marijuana products from licensed retailers, which would launch in December 2022. They could also cultivate up to 6 plants for personal use, only 3 of which could be mature. A maximum of 12 plants could be grown per household with more than one adult. Social consumption sites would be permitted. Cannabis products would be subject to a state tax of 9%, plus an additional 4% local tax. Marijuana distributors would also face a THC tax on flowers, concentrates, and edibles, applied on a sliding scale based on type of product, up to 3 cents per milligram. A Connecticut House committee on Thursday approved a bill to legalize marijuana, a notable development as lawmakers work to reconcile what they've been proposing with the governor's reform plan. The measure, sponsored by Representative Robin Porter, cleared the legislature's Labor and Public Employees Committee in a 9-4 vote. Advocates have cheered the bill's emphasis on social equity in the industry, and there's optimism its language could be incorporated into Governor Ned Lamont's legalization proposal, which they have said is inadequate as introduced. Unlike the governor's plan, this piece of legislation, which was amended in committee, would allow home cultivation of up to 6 cannabis plants and would license social consumption sites. It also includes additional language on cannabis gifting and social equity applicants. A bill to legalize marijuana in Minnesota cleared a fourth House committee on Wednesday, bringing it another step closer to a floor vote in the chamber. House Majority Leader Ryan Winkler and Speaker Melissa Hortman and other lawmakers filed the measure last month. It would allow adults 21 and older to purchase and possess up to 1.5 ounces of cannabis and cultivate up to 8 plants, 4 of which could be mature.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would just close by saying that legalization of adult use cannabis is coming to Minnesota one time or another. Our neighbors to the west, North and South Dakota, have pursued this. North Dakota is on the verge of passing it through their legislature. As more and more states legalize cannabis, the question is not whether we are able to stop the trend. The question is whether we are well prepared to do this right from the beginning.
A much-anticipated bill to legalize marijuana in Delaware cleared its first committee hurdle on Wednesday after wide-ranging testimony about how and whether the state should enact the reform. The legislation, HB 150, filed by Representative Ed Osiensky last week, passed the House Health and Human Development Committee in a 10-5 vote, despite vocal opposition from some Republican members of the panel. Quote, this act allows adults over the age of 21 to legally possess and consume under 1 ounce of marijuana for personal use, Osiensky said, and creates the legal framework to license and regulate a new industry that will create well-paying jobs, end quote. The bill, as introduced, would establish a regulated commercial cannabis system and tax sales at 15%. Home cultivation for personal use, however, would remain illegal. Kansas lawmakers on Thursday began making decisions on proposed amendments to a bill to legalize medical marijuana, moving the proposal closer to a committee vote that could come next week. Members of the House Federal and State Affairs Committee have been meeting daily this week to go over more than a dozen proposed revisions. Chairman John Barker said during Monday's initial hearing that the plan was to have legislators take most of the week to review the amendments and then hold a vote on Thursday. But the large number of amendments has slowed the pace of progress, and now the chairman says he will be asking the House Speaker for permission to hold another day or two of meetings to consider the cannabis legislation next week. If the panel can't finish its work by then, Barker said members may return to the bill later during a potential veto session, or will perhaps have to start over again on a new proposal next year. The Oregon Liquor Control Commission pushed a ruling on Thursday to limit the unchecked use of Delta-8 THC and other artificial cannabinoids in Oregon cannabis products. While it can produce some psychotropic effects in certain people, it is considered less potent than its cousin, Delta-9 THC, which is the primary form of THC found in most cannabis products. Delta-8 THC has grown in popularity over the last couple of years, not only emerging in the cannabis supply chain and for sale nationwide, but also in unregulated convenience stores. Commissioners on Thursday expressed concern that unlike Delta-9 THC, Delta-8 remains unregulated. It's not addressed in the Oregon statutes, nor is it included in Oregon Health Authority marijuana concentration limits. There is also no testing for Delta-8 THC, or the byproducts included in its chemical conversion. Medical marijuana advocates protested to no avail Thursday as a second Florida House committee advanced statutory limits to an active ingredient in the plant medicine. Legislation that would establish maximum caps for THC levels in Florida's medical cannabis program is now one step from the House floor, having cleared the second of three committees on a 9-6 vote. A version of this bill has passed the House before. However, despite having passed the Healthcare Appropriations Committee Thursday, there's still no certainty THC caps could become law this year, regardless of House approval. The bill, HB 1455, sponsored by Representative Spencer Roach, would limit the controversial compound levels to 10% for smokable marijuana and 60% for concentrates. The governor of New Jersey said on Monday that he's open to the idea of decriminalizing possession of all currently illicit drugs, though his focus remains set for now on implementing marijuana legalization in the state. During a press briefing, Governor Phil Murphy was asked where he stands on ending criminalization for simple possession, as Oregon has done following voter approval of a reform initiative in November.
Am I open-minded to decriminalizations, further decriminalizations? I suppose so, but I think we've taken the biggest step, and that is marijuana. I think we've taken a big step, and I want to get that step embedded. That's my personal opinion, and get this right before we consider taking further steps.
This has been your Cannabis Headline News for the week ending Friday, March 26, 2021. I'm Russ Belville. Cannabis headline news is heard at the top of every hour on Radical Russ Radio, and Friday's news is contained within the free Russ Belville Show Live podcast. For daily downloads of Cannabis Headline News podcast to your device every morning, subscribe by becoming a patron of Radical Russ Radio. Thanks to all the patrons who are subscribing at patreon.com/radicalrus. Appreciate that. Helps keep us on the air and defray some of these podcasting expenses. We've got plenty more coming up on this first hour of the show. But first, it's that time. That's right. It's 4:20 here in the Mountain Time Zone. Time for us to take our union-mandated safety briefing. And when we return, a behind-the-headlines look at the voter suppression that's going on in Georgia. Once again, if you can't win, you gotta cheat, I guess. Plus, later on in the show, New York home grow and lounges are coming.
4:20 is coming up soon. But while tokers in most Western states are free to celebrate our cannabis holiday, tokers in Idaho will still go to jail. Join the Idaho Citizens Coalition this 4:20 on the steps of the Idaho Capitol to protest for our rights as cannabis consumers. Kind Idaho will be there with the Idaho Medical Marijuana Act. Come sign the petition and learn how to become a volunteer signature gatherer. Show your support by joining us online on 4:20 at 11 a.m. Mountain at facebook.com/IdahoCan.
The Russ Belville Show reminds you to never smoke and drive impaired. Hang out for a while and share.
Almost busted in Laredo, but for reasons that I'd rather not disclose.
I smoke pot, and I like it a lot. Hi, this is Willie Nelson. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer to use than alcohol. There's absolutely nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting responsible marijuana smokers in America. And to learn what you can do to help, please contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORMAL.
The show was long and we were just sitting there, and we'd come to play and not just for the ride.
The world of cannabis is evolving at a frenetic pace. The Russ Belville Show gets behind the headlines to take a deeper look at breaking news in our cannabis focus.
Well, today we have seen an affront to democracy like no other going on in the state of Georgia, where the legislature, Republican legislature there, muscled through this bill, a new bill that creates all sorts of barriers to people being able to exercise their right to vote. It's all, of course, in reaction to Stacey Abrams and the Democratic Party turning Georgia blue, sending two Democratic senators to the U.S. Capitol, and in general, just motivating and mobilizing the Democratic and Reed black and brown vote in the state of Georgia. So once again, when they can't win, they're finding ways to cheat. The governor there, Brian Kemp, is only in power because of cheating in the first place. He narrowly beat Stacey Abrams in the gubernatorial race by something like 30,000 votes, but only after he, as Secretary of State, was able to purge hundreds of thousands of people from the voting rolls, mostly black and Democratic voters. And yeah, you heard that right. He was the Republican Secretary of State running the election that he was running for governor in. So he get to call the shots in his own election, and that's the only way he got elected. And they're trying to make sure that no other Democrats can get elected or make it a whole lot harder. Here's some of what they've put into this bill. And the most controversial, it's getting a lot of play, is that it bans what's called line warming. And this is because they've put so few voting machines and polling places in the black precincts that black voters are having to stand in long lines for hours, 8 to 10 hours to vote. And so, of course, you're going to get thirsty, you're going to need some water, you're going to need some food, and you can't step out of line. You don't want to lose your place in line. They banned that. They made it a crime to give people water that are standing in line. Look, anytime you're passing laws that make it illegal to give people food and water, you're doing it wrong. You're on the wrong side of justice and compassion and what it means to be a human being. But beyond that,
Other things that they've added to this, criminalizes the line warming. That's the first part. The next part, unlimited challenges to voter registration. They can just keep challenging and challenging and try to knock people off of the polls, off of the out of the polls. Mail-in voting restrictions, making it harder to do mail-in voting, restricting the times that can be voted. And again, all of this coming down to the fact that they're losing, that these people are losing demographically, that they cannot win without having some sort of minority rule. And well, I guess, you know, Idaho's legislature, having been on recess for having gotten COVID, too many of their members have gotten infected with the virus, had to take a break from being the most restrictive state. And Georgia took over during the break. And it's just the worst part of this comes down to the signing of the bill, where Governor Kemp, white Governor Kemp, with six white men standing behind him in front of the portrait of a plantation from the South, signing this bill that is basically Jim Crow 2.0, reestablishing these they used to literacy tests and poll taxes to try to stop black people from voting. But this is the audio from the...
Why does she have to step back?
This is a state representative, Park Cannon. She's standing.
The governor is signing a bill that affects all Georgians. Why is he doing it in private? And why is he trying to keep elected officials who are representing us out of the process?
Exactly.
She's just trying to get in and watch. Standing there at the door, there's a Georgia state trooper. She wants to knock on the door. Just, hey, can someone come in here?
Give her one more time. Like you're gonna.
She knocks on the door. That's it. They're putting her under arrest.
No, you are not representing.
She's not under arrest.
What is for what? Under arrest for what? For trying to see something that our governor is doing?
So the state troopers put the black Democratic representative under arrest for knocking on the door. Now, under Georgia law, you can't arrest the lawmakers while they're in session except for treason or felony. So they charged her with two felonies for trying to knock on the door, something having to do with interrupting the legislative process and causing a scene. I don't know what the felonies are. Obviously trumped up charges. So why do I bring this up when it comes to a marijuana show? Because when it comes to gaining our rights, this is the way we've done it, is through the democratic process. In most states, don't have a initiative process. Georgia is one of those states that does not have an initiative process. So everything is going to happen through the vote. And the more they try to restrict people's rights to vote, the more they try to take the franchise away from people, the worse it is for our cause. And I think we need to understand that as marijuana activists, that marijuana is just happens to be the subject we're interested in, but the game it's played in is democracy. And so we all need to be attuned to attacks on voting rights, attacks on initiative rights, attacks on the ability to cast the vote. We should be opening the vote up to more people. Notice how easy they want to make it for you to get guns. You can get a gun the same day in Georgia as the shooter in Atlanta did so tragically. But you can't register to vote the same day as the election. It gives you some look at what the people in power really fear. The guns keep us divided, keep us afraid. But the vote, that's how we can actually change things. People tell me that voting doesn't change anything. I always light up a legal joint and say, please tell me more. Tell me how voting doesn't change anything. So my best wishes go out to my friends in Georgia, in Atlanta, and all the rest of the state. Many of great folks that I've met who've been very active in politics, some of who even run for office in the state of Georgia. We can do more of that. Stay tuned. When we come back, we're going to talk about marijuana, specifically the state of New York, where Governor Grabby... Mr. Pickup Artist himself, cruising for foxes. Yeah, Governor Cuomo's mistakes may have made for a better marijuana legalization. That's coming up right after the break, and we'll wind things up talking about Joe Biden firing people for marijuana. What did you expect?
Michael Russ here for the Idaho Citizens Coalition for Cannabis. Since 2010, the members of the Idaho Citizens Coalition have been fighting to legalize marijuana in America's last absolute prohibition state. We believe Idahoans deserve legal access to the cannabis plant in all of its forms. Find out more about the Idaho Citizens Coalition at idahocan.co. That's idahocann.co. And find us on Facebook at IdahoCan. You're listening to Radical Russ Radio, right on the edge of America's last absolute prohibition state.
For Cannabis Shakespearean Theater, I'm Leonard Pinth-Garnell III. In this episode, we bring you a treasured classic of the cannabis cinema as interpreted by the Royal Shakespearean Cannabis Theater Company, 1982's Fast Times at Ridgemont High. In this scene, a teenage cook named Brad, played by Judge Reinhold, is admonishing three stoned teenagers, played by Eric Stoltz, Anthony Edwards, and Sean Penn as the iconic surfer bro, Jeff Spicoli. Enjoy!
The purchase of our meal hither shall fall upon thee, fellow, who between thee possesseth Dolores of immense proportion.
Hark! Verily thou entered yon establishment clothed in thine shirts.
Something hath happened to them, sir.
Take heed, Spicoli. Replace thine shirts forthwith. Cast thine visage upon yon signage.
Lacketh shirt.
Lacketh
shoes.
Lacketh dice.
Indeed, learneth it, knoweth it, liveth it.
For Cannabis Shakespearean Theater, I'm Leonard Pinth-Garnell III.
Hi, I'm Radical Russ Belville, the sole producer of this 24-hour marijuana music and cannabis conversation stream I call Radical Russ Radio. As part of my mission to educate and entertain people about the need to end adult marijuana prohibition, I produce the Russ Belville Show podcast every week, available absolutely free wherever you get your podcasts. For those of you who'd like to help support my mission financially, you can become a Radical Russ Radio VIP at patreon.com/radicalruss or by clicking the link for Toker Talk Radio in the main menu. For just $4.20 a month, VIPs will receive the exclusive download of hour two of my podcast, Toker Talk Radio, every week, as well as the 5-minute cannabis headline news every weekday. Upgrade to the $14.20 a month tier, and you'll get those podcasts and a set of custom patriotic pro-marijuana stickers from me every quarter. And if you can afford to support Radical Russ Radio at $44.20 a month, you get my podcast, and each quarter you receive a poster, then a mug, then a t-shirt, and finally a hoodie that proclaim your support for ending adult marijuana prohibition. I literally cannot do this without you. Your support enables me to continue my life's work, and I thank you for it. Visit patreon.com/radicalruss and become a Radical Russ Radio VIP today. Marijuana legalization is just the beginning of a process of restoring our natural rights to the cannabis plant. Join us now as we learn more about the rules, regulations, and court decisions that are shaping the landscape of legal marijuana in this edition of Pot Public Policy.
We go to the Empire State today for Pot Public Policy, where marijuana legalization may finally be happening in New York State. It's been proposed in, the last three budgets that Governor Andrew Cuomo has put forth, but never made it. And it's not been a case of whether they want to legalize marijuana. It's been a case of how is it going to be done. And in New York State, you've got a very powerful coalition of progressive interests that want to make sure that marijuana is not corporatized and that its legalization serves to remediate some of the harms that have been done to the communities that are most been devastated by the war on drugs. People of color, poor people that have been victimized and over-policed. So it's running a roadblock after roadblock for the past 3 years because of these concerns where Cuomo wants to keep this a little tighter. No home grow and continue to punish minors and very a very restrictive form of legalization. But as you may know, if you've been following the political headlines, Governor Cuomo has been embroiled in a bit of another controversy having to do with sexual harassment. Many claims from former and I think some current employees of his or staffers of his that have alleged all sorts of things. We're not going to get into that, but it does highlight how those kind of scandals can change the political calculus, because now Governor Cuomo's kind of weak and he's been having to negotiate in from a position of weakness and has apparently given on some of these concerns that activists and some of the Democratic Assembly members have had with New York legalization. So what we may be getting out of New York State, rather than being one of the standard East Coast, no home, grow, very limited type of legalizations, may end up being one of the better legalizations in the entire United States, including some of the Western states. So let's take a look at some of the details, and these are coming to us via reports in Marijuana Moment. Standard 21 and older age, and they're looking at licensed retailers launching in December of 2022. So a long ways off. I guess you got to have time for the crops to be grown and harvested and the licenses to be procured and so forth. But wow, that seems a long way off. Cultivation for home grow. 6 plants for personal use, only 3 of which can be mature. Maximum 12 plants per household. Municipalities could not ban people from growing their own, but they could impose regulations. Medical cannabis patients could be able to start growing 6 months after the law takes effect. Regular old people who want to grow their own would have to wait 18 months after the first marijuana retailer launches. Now, this is strange. I haven't seen this kind of delayed home grow language before, where it's going to be legalized and home grow will be legal, but not until a year and a half after the first pot shops open. Well, this is obviously a sop to the commercial marijuana growers, the commercial marijuana community, something to try to ease them into the marketplace by refusing to have them competing with people growing their own. I don't see the need for it. If home grow is going to be legal, why not just have it be legal? But we'll see how that works out. They'll create a New York Cannabis Control Board, 5-member board, 3 members appointed by the governor, state and the Senate and Assembly appointing 1 member each. Interesting, though, it'd be nice to see some guidelines as to who would be on that board, people who have been impacted by the drug war, people with expertise in cultivation, in pharmacology, in medicine, perhaps. I guess we'll just have to see how that works out. Just the one line here on social consumption sites would be permitted. We're talking about pot lounges. And this is something that has been a struggle in the Western states to some extent. And it's nice to see an East Coast state moving ahead with this. It seems obvious to me that if you're going to make it legal, people ought to have the right to be able to gather together and use it, especially if we allow that right when it comes to alcohol. With marijuana being so much less harmful, it just seems like a no-brainer. And it's my hope that New York goes forward with this, and then that prompts the rest of the states that have legalization to say, well, look, you know, if New York's doing it, why aren't we? Individual jurisdictions could opt out of allowing retailers or lounges, but voters could overturn bans with their local ballot measures. And that's what'll happen. You'll have a few of them that'll opt out at first, you know, the more conservative areas, maybe upstate New York, opting out of this. But then they'll start to see the money that the other locations are making, because a few won't opt out. And they'll start to draw the cannabis money from these other areas that are opted out and the resulting tax revenue with it. This is the pattern that we've seen in Colorado and in California and Oregon. It's just becomes too much of a lure. So I don't worry too much about those things. I start to look more long term on them anymore and see that those bans will be overturned eventually. We also get a 3-tier licensing structure: growers, wholesalers, and retailers. But there would also be micro businesses, vertically integrated micro businesses. And this is something I like to call legalize what we're already doing with marijuana. Like, what's already happening, right? there's small grows out there, small closet and basement grows, and people sell them out of backpacks and stuff. So legalize that. Create a license for that. Some minor level of inspection, but the marijuana distribution industry, especially in New York, has been going on for decades. Let's just find a way to legalize as much of what's going on now as possible. So the idea of micro businesses, I'm so glad that's taking off, especially in the East Coast. We've seen this being floated in New Jersey as well. And it needs to happen in the West Coast some more as well. So you could be a mom and pop, a literal mom and pop shop, growing your own in the backyard, selling it to a small group of customers. Let's legalize what people are already doing with marijuana. Now, there's a goal of 50% marijuana business licenses for social equity applicants. That's past marijuana convictions or people who've got relatives who've been busted, as well as people who've lived in economically distressed areas or where there's been disproportionate drug war enforcement. Equity applicants also include minority and women-owned businesses, disabled veterans, and financially distressed farmers. Taxes that they're looking at in New York state tax of 9%, 4% local tax, but also a THC tax, a tax based on the milligrams of THC in flowers, concentrate, or edibles, up to 3 cents a milligram, which is interesting because then, of course, the tax is higher on your more potent items. And I've seen this floated by people like Pat Oglesby with Center for New Revenue and other tax experts who suggest this might be the more intelligent way to tax marijuana products, especially as more states become legal and the supply starts bringing the prices lower and lower. A flat percentage tax on the price then means less income for the states and localities that are taxing it. But if you got a tax that's based on the potency, well, that kind of gives you something that's kind of a little more consistent to work with. Also, from a public health perspective, you might consider you're getting people to not always buy the most potent product. I don't know. I'd like to see some more information on that, but I'm glad to see what's going on here with New York State. And if we could finally get New York State legalized, you know we've got Connecticut, Rhode Island, Delaware, Maryland, the rest of those. Virginia's already passed legalization. New Hampshire should get on board soon enough. The whole eastern seaboard and all of New England will be legal marijuana country. Looking forward to it. Come a long way since the days of Keith Stropp and Rick Cusick getting busted for a joint at the Boston Freedom Rally. We're going to take a break. When we come back, time for a radical rant. We're going off on drug war Joe Biden firing people for using pot. Do you make Kamala fire him?
The Coffee Pod in Sumter, Oregon is your fast, friendly marijuana shop nestled in the beautiful Elkhorn Mountain Range outside of Baker City. We're serving Eastern Oregon and Idaho's Treasure Valley with the selection of flower, pre-rolls, vapes, dab, and edibles you need at the prices that make it well worth the drive. Don't venture to some well-watched parking lot in some border town dispensary just to take a number and wait in a long line for your cannabis products. Make the drive to the Coffee Pot in Sumter and deal one-on-one with your bud tender with no waiting. See, feel, and smell the products you're after and make your purchase knowing your tax dollars are helping a small tourist community that needs it. Plus, every dollar you spend is a point toward our Bong Bucks program that earns you coupons on glass and accessories. The Coffee Pot also honors our military, seniors, teachers, and first responders with a 10% discount. And as always, OMMP patients pay no 20% tax. Come on up to the Coffee Pot in Sumter, the first business on the left, on the side of the two-story log cabin restaurant, and tell them Radical Rest sent you.
And now, a brief glimpse into the future.
I am a non-attorney spokesperson. For decades, the United States government criminally prohibited cannabis. Because of that prohibition, many consumers may have knowingly or unknowingly smoked schwag, marijuana of poor quality, also known as ditchweed, Mexican brick, or simply shit. If you or a loved one smoked schwag, you may be entitled to financial compensation. Smoking schwag has been linked to coughing, hacking, and failure to get high.
Exposure to swag in college, parking lots, bodegas, parties, restaurant, or hospitality industries may put you at risk. Please don't wait. Call 1-800-420-LAW today for a free legal consultation and financial information packet. Swag survivors, call now. 1-800-420-LAW.
This has been a look into the future.
It's time for Idaho to join the rest of the nation in legalizing medical marijuana. The volunteers at Kind Idaho have proposed the Idaho Medical Marijuana Act and are collecting signatures now to place it on the ballot. Visit kindidaho.org to learn more. Become a volunteer signature gatherer for Kind Idaho to help collect the over 65,000 signatures needed to put medical marijuana on the November 2022 ballot. Polls show it will pass. Please visit kindidaho.org today.
We must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical rant.
Well, you knew it wouldn't be too long into the administration of Joe Biden that I would have to be ranting about something he did regarding the drug war. And it has to do with this unfolding spectacle of the White House staffers. The story originally broke that a number of White House staffers had been pressured out of their jobs, fired, or reassigned to remote assignments for their marijuana use. They had admitted their marijuana use, and some of them, even from D.C. or other states where it's legal to use marijuana, forced out of their jobs after being assured verbally by the members of the transition team that, no, be honest, everything will be fine. You know, this is not your grandpa's Joe Biden. This is the new Joe Biden, I guess, the new administration. The Democratic Party's cool with marijuana use now, but apparently not. Because some of these staffers got fired. And it got some pushback by members of Congress, notably Earl Blumenauer and the Congressional Cannabis Caucus, writing a letter all basically saying, look, you know, Kamala Harris joked on the Breakfast Club with Charlemagne the God that she had smoked pot listening to Tupac and Biggie, which that was some controversy, too, because her timeline's a bit off. But regardless, she joked about smoking pot. Pete Buttigieg, your Secretary of Transportation, he's joked about smoking pot. Are they going to lose their jobs? So it became kind of a hypocrisy issue. Plus, there is that ongoing battle between the progressive and the establishment wings of the Democratic Party where, you know, Joe Biden's 79 years old, 78, 79 years old. You know, Nancy Pelosi's 80. Chuck Schumer's in his late 70s. You know, being painted as out of touch. People like Dianne Feinstein in the Senate, who still, as a senator from California, can't get on board with marijuana legalization. A guy like Joe Biden, who spent his entire career in the Senate as one of the architects of the war on drugs, the master, the author of the crime bill, the creator of the drug czar's office. Joe Biden never met a drug law he didn't like. And so we've got Joe Biden's administration now, apparently, once again, unwilling to recognize that marijuana consumers are normal, decent, talented, hardworking people just as much as anybody else is. Joe himself is famously a teetotaler. He does not drink. He's got alcoholism in his family and has famously shied away from drinking. And I don't know that that's necessarily a good or bad thing. In my personal experience, I found the people that have been the victims of hard drug abuse, like alcoholism, can be some of the most virulent reefer mad prohibitionists that you ever meet. So I've seen that in Joe Biden's record. I've seen that in his rhetoric. So it's not surprising these guys got fired, but I think he was caught unaware, or his administration, I don't know that this is this high on his radar, were caught unaware of how much the landscape has shifted. since the legalization of marijuana in Colorado and Washington State, and it becoming an essential industry during a pandemic. They didn't understand the pushback they'd get on it, and so they've been trying to clean this up. And so just this, just Friday, I think it was, just this week, it was 25th, so it'd be yesterday. Yeah, it was yesterday. The press secretary, Jen Psaki, got on the mic to try to push back on this, to say, look, this is getting blown out of proportion, this whole thing about the marijuana people. And so she released a statement to Playboy's reporter, Brian Karam, and I'll just read you what it says. No one has been let go due to marijuana usage from years ago. No one has been let go due to casual or infrequent use during the prior 12 months. The policy has allowed around a dozen White House staff to continue serving in the administration who would not have been permitted under prior administration's policies. All right, so I'm going to go backwards on. Let me start with that last part. Because this is the putting the lipstick on the pig part. This is that, well, we're not firing a bunch of other people who would have got fired. Well, we stuck the knife in 6 inches in your back, but we pulled it out 3. Yeah. So they wouldn't have been fired, and they wouldn't have been working under prior administrations, and now you're going to let them work. This reminds me a little bit of something that happened under the prior administration. See, under Joe Biden's crime bill, there was a part of it called the crack coke disparity. The powder, crack powder disparity was another way it was called. And the way that it worked is in this crime bill, it set up these mandatory minimums, right? So to get a mandatory minimum sentence, you got to have a certain amount of drugs on you to trip that mandatory minimum. And when it came to powder cocaine, it was 500 grams, half a kilo. You got 500 grams of powder cocaine, you're going to get the 5-year mandatory minimum. But when it was crack cocaine, you only had to have 5 grams. 5 grams of crack cocaine, 500 grams of powder cocaine. Now, of course, powder cocaine is something that Wall Street bankers use and Hollywood celebrities. That's what white folks use. But crack cocaine, that's the cheap $5, $10 rocks that you're getting on the street corner and that people of color are using. So basically what you had is a law that was 100 times more punitive to poor black people and poor urban people than it was to white executives, Wall Street celebrity rich folks. 100-to-1 disparity. That's what Joe Biden created in his law. So when he was vice president and President Obama was in charge, a lot of people pointed this out, this crack coke disparity, 100-to-1 disparity. So racist. It's so terribly racist, 100-to-1 between white people's cocaine and black people's cocaine. So the Obama administration addressed this and they passed a new law. New law changed it so that the trigger for the white powder cocaine was only 18 times as much as the crack cocaine. Not 100 times. They reduced it to like an ounce or something instead of 500 grams. 100 grams, something like that. I don't remember exactly. But basically the result was the law went from 100-to-1 racist to 18-to-1 racist, and they waved a victory flag. Woohoo! We made the law less racist. That's what I think of when I see that statement from Jen Psaki saying the new policy has allowed more White House staffers to work who would have been fired before. Okay, yay! You're less persecuting of marijuana smokers. But you're still persecuting marijuana smokers. Right? So let me get to the other parts of this statement. No one has been let go due to marijuana usage from years ago. So using logical inference, someone has been let go due to marijuana usage recently. Not years ago. Within the past year, someone has been let go for their marijuana use within the past year. from that first statement. The next statement was, no one has been let go due to casual or infrequent use during the prior 12 months. So once again, that reasserts that someone's been let go because of their marijuana use within the past 12 months. Now, they haven't been let go due to casual use. What the hell is casual use? Like they're wearing a t-shirt and board shorts at the time? I'm sorry, we had to let them go. They were smoking a joint while wearing a tuxedo. And if there's one thing we will not tolerate in the Biden administration, it's formal use. Right? Like, what is casual use? What is formal use, right? The other part of it, casual or infrequent use. Well, what's infrequent? How frequent is infrequent within the past 12 months? Is Jen Psaki trying to tell us that someone is let go because they've used marijuana formally and at least once a month or at least once a week? Or what's infrequent? You know what I think this comes down to? I think it comes down to, and this is just, you know, conjecture on my part. It comes down to people who they had to fire because they had posted about their marijuana use. That's my bet. My bet is there's pictures of them on their Facebook or their social media, the Instagram, TikTok, whatever the hell else, of them ripping bong hits or doing dabs or holding the joint or in a tie-dye at a hemp fest or something. So what I really believe is going on here is these White House staffers being let go for their culture, for who they are, for what they project. Because that word casual just sticks to me. Like, what is casual use? Casual use is use that you don't think is stereotypical. Casual use is use that doesn't stick out to you. That word casual to me just makes me think of good stoner, bad stoner. Like, there's something about it that it's not the marijuana, it's the way it looks. That's the feeling I get of this statement. Now, they are saying that 5 people have lost their job, according to Psaki, but she's declined to speak to the extent of whether they've been suspended, they've been put in a remote work program, and there's no new information with respect to that. And the other implication of this was that, well, marijuana is still illegal federally. Well, gosh, wouldn't it be nice if there was someone you could talk to who could do something about that? Like, the clearances for people who work for the White House, that's up to the president. He could unilaterally say, hey, if you smoked pot or do smoke pot, it doesn't matter. And that's the other thing that bothers me. How many White House staffers go and frequent the famous Georgetown bars that are, you know, legendary in D.C. lore? How much is alcohol a part of the daily and, let's say, nightly life of people working in D.C.? And unless someone's exhibiting signs of alcoholism, having difficulty, you know, coming to work without a hangover, and even in some cases working through it, nobody bats an eyelash. I think people that are frequent, formal marijuana smokers ought to be able to work for the White House. And there's probably some that already are, who are having to keep it on the down low while their friends talk about the fun they had at the tavern. Oh, when so-and-so said this and that, or have you had this new drink? And I don't think people understand how much that affects a lot of us who are cannabis consumers. How the general cultural acceptance of alcohol and alcohol culture, and people talking about it, and the cookouts, and the parties, and the events that are all alcohol-fueled, the Christmas party, the company party, and nobody thinks twice about talking about their experiences with that, even when they're sometimes embarrassing. But those of us that are cannabis consumers can't talk about the diggity dank that we smoked last week, or how funny comedy show was after we got high. That's why this Psaki and Biden story just bothers me, because I've been in that world. I've been in that button-down, wear-a-suit-and-tie world, having to hide who you are, and it's no fun. And I know there's a whole bunch of people listening to me who are saying, oh, really, tell me more what it's like to be in a closet, but we'll save that for hour two, because that's all the time we got for hour one, folks. Thanks for joining us. For everyone here in America's last absolute prohibition state, I'm Radical Russ, and until next time, take care of each other, tokers. It goes down smooth.